Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the annual DEEB meeting, or monthly DEEB meeting. Just a reminder, this meeting is being recorded. The audio will be posted to the website. We'll start with introductions here in the room. I'm Seth Halling with AKS Engineering.
Andrew Gunther with PLS Engineering.
Dan Weisner, Sonbert Homes.
Jerry Jones, Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Brian Wilson, Wilson Architects.
Terry Wallum, Wallum Associates.
Mike Odrin, McKay Esposito.
Eric Galimo, SGA Engineering.
Megan Fletcher, Community Development.
Michaela Rankin, Community Development.
Houston Ajo, Ajo Construction.
Noelle Lover in the BIA. April Firth, Director of Community Development for Clark County.
Brent Davis, Community Development.
Diana Nutt, Development Engineering.
Mark Hess, Community Development.
All right, and those online?
Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramis.
Brian Cass, City of the Center.
I will go Oliver Ojiako, Community Planning.
Jose Alvarez, Community Planning.
Amy, I see you're online.
I said my name, Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramis.
Yeah, we got you. All right, we got you, Jamie. I see Amy Wooten and Jackie Lane online. Is that everyone else? All right. Well, with that, we'll move to the next item, which is to review and adopt the minutes. One item I did notice here was Brian was cast as listed as a member of the public when he took Nick Flagg's spot. So that's just one correction I'd noted. Anybody else?
Mr. Chair, I've reviewed and I don't have any other corrections. So I move for approval.
Motion, is there a second?
Second.
All right, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And Megan, could you cover the upcoming events, please?
Of course. Okay. There is a couple of council meetings that were listed on their calendar. They have no agenda as of yet. That was January 16th at 6 p.m. and January 23rd at 10 a.m. There is also a Clark County work session on January 3rd regarding fire district impact fees and code amendments. The Planning Commission does have a work session for this evening. The work session includes biannual code amendments by Brent Davis, the comp plan update by Oliver and Jose in planning, and the comprehensive plan allocation process by Jose. And there will be a public hearing on the 18th at 6:30 that will be regarding the biannual code updates by Brent Davis.
Thank you. With that, is there any member announcements?
No, but do we have any word when the housing options is going to come back up for hearing? I think it was continued, and it's been in work session, or not work session, but the work group. And I think they're pretty close. I'm on it, and it seems like we're pretty close. So, but is there a date or a target? No.
We're scheduled to have a work session January 17th.
Is that the work group?
No.
That's the council.
This is taking the work from the work group to the council.
Oh, okay.
All Any other items from the board? All right, hearing none, we'll go to the item two, which is election of chair and vice chair. I guess nominations are open for the chair position.
Well, in keeping with tradition, I would nominate Sherry Jones for chair.
Sherry's been nominated. Is there,
do we need Jamie seconded?
Jamie seconded.
Okay. Any other nominations or? All right. All those in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed?
I just say aye.
All right. And then nominations for vice chair is open.
Who hasn't been chair yet?
I'd like to nominate Ryan Wilson.
I'll second.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. Motion a second. Any other nominations before we close nominations? All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. With that, I'll turn it over to Sherry.
Yeah, when he came in, he's like, soon it'll be your chair. Big smile. Okay, so the next item is the 2024 work plan items. I believe we need to set those for the year.
So one thing we've done in the past is we have our work plan and kind of what we use when we present to council. It's probably a good idea to kind of have the chair, vice chair go over that, see what kind of suggestions they make to the board, and then we review that list and we add or subtract things to it and adjust it. But usually kind of those two kind of refine that list, and then we go off of that.
Yeah, the other part of that is to work with the past chair in developing, you know, the work that we've done in the past. So that will be coming up probably sometime in the spring when we'll need to get that scheduled for our meeting with the council. The other thing is that, Megan, if you could reach out to the council, please, and ask them if they have anything specific that they would like us to review, take a look at, or otherwise advise them on, as we're their advisory group. That would also be good to know, so that we can get that on our work plan as well. I think the only other items that, you know, the hot topic items are going to be coming up with the housing options, and then following that, the multifamily housing options as well. And so I'm not sure what else was on our, and I don't have a copy of our current work plan with us.
Yeah, the comp plan is going to be a big one over the next year. So that's those items, I think those are kind of our main ones, and other stuff as they come up, really. I know we talked about streamlining permitting a little bit, any different processes that the county is doing, staffing, those kind of things we usually kind of weigh in on as well, but they're more kind of on demand or as required.
You brought up an interesting topic of the kind of the concurrent review, and I know that last time at our last meeting, April said that they're going to have a couple of pilot projects go through that. Have those started?
I think we have a meeting about that next week with one of the ones. So we had to ask them, see if they agreed with it. And so is it PLS?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have one going through with PLS.
Okay.
And he's agreed to it. We're just going to have a meeting and to discuss it and how we're going to move forward, because it is really a coordination with us and the applicant to make sure we keep hitting the timeline.
Okay, good.
There's also something that I didn't get on the agenda, if I can add it to the end, because I'm kind of excited about it. Okay.
I guess, Eric, you mentioned that the chair, vice chair kind of come up with a list of options. I thought with putting this on the agenda was just kind of if we could brainstorm kind of like we're doing, if there's anything else that the board has. I know one other thing that I've run into on a couple of projects is the arterial atlas and the fact that there are certain areas where the arterial atlas hasn't really been thought through, and it causes issues during development. You know, there's some places where there's gaps, or, you know, just areas where they're labeled neighborhood circulator and there's not even a budding residential properties, it's commercial, and, you know, those aren't supposed to take access from a neighborhood street. So there's just some of that type of stuff that I think we could, as a engineering, you know, advisory board could weigh in on. Yeah. Well, it's on the arterial plan, which is part of the capital facilities, I guess, for the, you know, comprehensive plan.
Public Works.
They're the ones that would advise what GIS puts on there. Yes.
And I know.
Go ahead.
And then I also know there's been a number of requests from the public in terms of comp plan or zone changes as part of this. I don't know. Is that something that this board ever reviews and discusses as well, or
what specific zone change request?
Well, individual requests. So if a, you know, developer has a piece of property and wants to change, you know, from a lower density to a higher density or something along those lines, those requests are submitted, you know, then I believe staff reviews them and then prepares a recommendation to council. But
unless something is specifically brought to DEEB, which is more of a I don't want to say conflict resolution, but more to get a different take on something like a road mod or something like that. We don't review specific zoning requests, zone change requests, or comp plan change requests either. That's not our purview. That's more the Planning Commission and the council. But I mean, if somebody wants to bust.
Yeah, these are just requests that, you know, as because of the annual update for 2025, they're just, you know, general public making a request. You know, it's not part of a specific application or a site-specific application that they have to do as part of, like, an annual review.
So you're saying it's related to the comp plan update?
Yeah.
And I would say that is typically commented on by Planning Commission, and site-specific things like that we haven't typically commented on. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's things as it relates to, you know, the vacant buildable lands model and different ways that we calculate that and aspects like that. Those are things where we would calculate into those aspects typically.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of so.
Okay.
I feel like I'm a bit of a broken record on this one, but is mixed use was being handled within, is that handled within multifamily options comp?
That is what we talked about before,
yeah.
It was
okay.
Part of the other one, and I believe it's in that second section.
Okay.
We have it.
Yeah.
So it will get addressed when we go through that.
Yeah.
And
there may be things that are not really, there might be issues with the multi or the mixed use code that are not related to like the
multifamily
options,
mm-hmm.
that we may have to address, but we don't know what's in there yet. So it could be pretty comprehensive. So.
Right.
And,
right.
And Seth, when you brought a lot of that mixed use stuff up, it more related to the housing aspect of mixed use,
yeah.
Correct? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we would be able to hit most of that, if not all of those concerns or issues at that point.
It'd be probably great if we do have some comments to get it to staff and their consultant before they even start the draft, so they can start reviewing it. I think Jose may be a good contact for that. I'm not sure. Jose, are you working on the multifamily one as well?
Jose, you're muted. You're talking.
Oh, Amy Wooten would be the contact for you.
So you still have that information that you presented to us, did you not, that you can maybe just pass along to Amy?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
It wasn't in the form of proposed code changes, but it kind of identifies some of the issues that came up. But I think with the proposal, it's going to be a significant code rework, and I don't know that it makes sense for us to try to put too much time into suggested code language, maybe.
I might suggest that we propose at least something. The reason why is that, you know, I don't want this to be an advisory board that just brings up the issues without any solutions or potential solutions. We're the experts here. We know it works in the field and on the ground and for our clients. And if we are running into issues with any code, then we should propose, you know, options to, you know, rewrite the code or possible revisions to the code in order to address those while still staying within the bookends of the intent of the current code. Whether it be a clarification or whether it be, hey, by the way, and then provide the rationale, very similar to what staff would do with a biannual code rewrite. You know, they propose the revisions and they provide rationale behind it. I think that would go a long ways into at least advising staff to what the concerns are, what the issues are, and, you know, help them along in, you know, in their internal discussions as far as whether they would support it or not. Mm-hmm.
I guess my concern was, like the housing options, there is significant reworking of that code, which if we would have proposed specific language, it would have been kind of, you know, it wouldn't have made much sense there. So I don't know how much changes are coming as part of that multifamily to the mixed use portion.
I see what you're saying.
So, I just don't want to. You know, we can send it out initially, you know,
you thinking this is a cart before the horse situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good one to present as, hey, here's some of the issues we see, and then it can be rolled in as it moves forward with proposed changes, I think. But
mm-hmm. I think it can't hurt to present it up front, and then it just helps to identify mm-hmm. issues and also acknowledge the fact that they may very well be alleviated with what they're going to be presenting.
Yeah,
I would say get whatever you have to Amy, so at least she has it and can have it as part of, you know, whatever work group happens to be pulled together for the multifamily housing.
Do we know when that work group is going to be pulled together?
After the other one goes to hearing, so that's what I was asking. I would guess probably the second quarter, because from what I've heard, the first quarter is kind of the target for the first batch. And then staff's going to need a little time to work on it. Maybe they already have started. I'm not sure. But I'm guessing that that group's going to convene soon after.
The multifamily groups had one meeting. The multifamily groups had one meeting so far. And then we stopped to go back and for them to work on the finish up the residential at this point. I think that we should also look. Eric, you had worked with the Parks Department before on park impact credits. And I think that we should probably look at that. I've done one out in the city of Battleground. I'm working preliminary stuff for the city of Vancouver, so Clark County should probably look at that too.
We had the joint work group, and we actually had recommendations and everything, and then COVID hit, and it just kind of fell on the back burner. So we could put that on our work plan, if you guys are working on that, to reconvene with that group. And as the parks are updating their plan, we could incorporate some of those recommendations that we agreed on.
I think it's already on our work plan.
Yeah.
So I don't see any reason why.
And Rocky attended one of our meetings in 23, so I think it's just checking in to see if there's been any traction, on his part.
I'd like to make a suggestion, though, for the work plan. We probably should get that scheduled on council's calendar sooner than later. Last year, we did it in February. I was hearing doing it in the spring, so we would just need a date on that sooner than later so I can get that on the calendar, please.
If we can get it sometime in March, mid to late March, I think that that would work. That would give everybody enough time to review. That would give us two meetings, February and March, to be able to review it. We've done a lot of that review via email as well. We just get so far, so late into the season that it's like, well, this is, we're already halfway through, you know, our
2024, and this is 2022, 2023. And so it seems a little out of place, but yeah, the sooner the better. I would think, yeah, mid to late March. That, if everybody else agrees with that.
I think, yeah, just making sure what spring break looks like for school,
right.
That we avoid that. We've always had a problem with kind of bumping up right against spring break.
Yeah.
So. First week of April. Okay,
no,
so.
First last week in March, so
we're
kind of back to back.
Okay.
So
I
avoid the last week in
March
and
Yeah. So maybe sometime right after our March meeting, ideally. Okay.
Yeah, our March meeting would be the 7th. So it'd either be the week of the 11th or the 18th. On the 18th, did you say last week in March is also off?
Yes.
Okay. So if we can start there, Megan, week of the 11th or the week of the 18th.
I'd like to hear from staff if there's anything that you would like to see us be focusing on.
Not to put you on the spot or anything.
I mean, it'll take us some time to pull this together, too. So if you think of something outside the meeting, you can email me. We'll add it to the list.
It'd be good to check in with Jennifer if she's not on the line.
Yeah, I'm here, but yeah, I was kind of put on the spot. Didn't realize.
Well, we put April on the spot, too. So.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely we'll think about that and have some recommendations.
Yeah, please do. Anything that we can do collaboratively always works, ends up being a better solution. And then BIA, they have anything? You probably have a lot of things, but anything anything that we could review directly related to Clark County itself.
Well,
you could think about it.
I could certainly put a list together.
Okay. No, that'd be great.
Maybe not right on the spot today.
No.
For sure. Would love to be part of that conversation.
Good.
Well, and I don't know that there will be much work for us to do on it, but I do know that there's stormwater changes that are coming in 2025. So they will be rolling out a lot of that stuff in 2024. And I don't know the details, but, and it's not local. It's, I think, a federal thing that is being funneled down. I don't know the details, but just have that on your radar. That'll come up at some point.
And I think we far exceed any federal regulations that are out there, so we better not be doing this again.
I think it's the state is coming out with a new stormwater manual. So,
it is?
Yeah. So it'd be following that implementation, then we would be. Yeah, there's other changes too, wetlands and.
Jennifer, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it affected residential as much, but I do think what Eric said is true, that it might be more on the industrial side.
Right. Yeah, it's not necessarily a new manual, just updates to the state manual. And the only big thing that I know about is the threshold for pollution generating surface to trigger MR6 for treatment has been pushed from 5,000 to 2,000.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in the rural or in the urban area?
In all areas.
All areas.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's just the biggest one from reviewing their revision so far.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Do they have an exception for single family residential?
that's kind of the comment I made when looking at that. And I think that's one of the comments that Clark County is going to have as a whole when they submit all their comments back to Ecology after we finalize our review.
All right, good.
That's just treatment, not detention, correct, or flow control? It's just quality control?
Correct. It is purely treatment.
Okay.
And that's only if you do already over the 5,000 square feet. So it wouldn't, just because you are over 2,000, of proposed hard surface, you wouldn't have to do treatment unless you go over 5,000 as a project as a whole.
I know we talked about this, and I know county has been
pretty proactive, but with all the housing bills that passed, I guess maybe having a little bit better sense of ripple effects of those housing affordability bills that have passed this last session, and anything that we should be proactive on to think about or consider that there's going to be conflicts. If someone takes a single residential lot, there's conflicts transportation wise, there's conflicts stormwater wise. How are those things going to be looked at and considered? That feels like a bit of a can of worms with how much planning there is done today compared to what there used to be. It was a very simplistic kind of broad brush approach to fixing the affordable housing situation. But I know that, again, there's lots of ripple effects come with that. So I guess how we can help to think through what those impacts are and how that's navigated, you know, and staff as far as like talking through that, seems like that would be good to do.
Harry, along with that, one big thing I'm seeing in Oregon that's ahead of Washington with the middle housing bill is the fact that developers of the middle housing, which try to put, you know, more density in these areas, are getting hit with crazy amount of retrofitting requirements to serve the units with the various urban services that would be necessary. And I think that the legislation is so poorly thought through. I mean, it seems like nice and flowery to let's try to create density everywhere, but when you have to retrofit everything in order to accommodate that, it really starts to break down from a financial perspective. And so I think you're right. I think we need to maybe put some serious thought into that. Like how are we going to have to rethink doing capital facilities planning because of this legislation?
When you say retrofitting, Jamie, are you talking about like upsizing sewer laterals to large lot single family residential that could then be further subdivided into like infill sort of projects, or upgrading water mains or water stubs so that, you know, a number of different units can be served rather than just the one that was originally, or what?
Yeah, for instance, I've got a project, let's hypothetically call it a two named city in by a lake in Oregon. And we want to use the middle housing bill to get a little bit more density than we may have been entitled to in prior years. But we realize in order to meet the engineering standards and, you know, standards required for utility service, that the lines necessary to serve that number of units is inadequate. In other words, you know, we're hooking up to like, hypothetically say a 6-inch pipe, and we really need an 8-inch pipe in the road to serve that many more units. And then you're looking at having to retrofit the city's infrastructure back a significant amount of linear feet in order to accommodate that. This thing has so many cans of worms in it. I think it's well intended, obviously, but it's not super well thought through. And so to the extent that we can advise on some of those pragmatic, practical, nuts and bolts engineering things to, you know, the county and cities that are required to adopt this stuff, the better.
Because I could see where you'd have to upsize like a sewer lateral to a public sewer line. And then take laterals off of that right there in the frontage. But are you talking that this is like a domino effect downstream issues that might then need to be upsized to accommodate the additional
capacity on either water or sewer. Is that kind of where we're going?
Yeah, and then when you get to a lot of these areas that may be greenfield or more apt to redevelop because, you know, the house is situated, you know, in a certain area, but with a large, you know, lot where additional development could come on and then you're having to stub it, it has that sort of downfield and upfield effect both ways, what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's probably really a case-by-case thing.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about, like, utilities. The curb and gutter and having to do frontage improvements for these retrofit projects are probably more – those come up more often. Sure. If you're doing, like, a triplex now would trigger them, where under the new bill, I think they're not going to be able to trigger them, or ADUs aren't going to be able to trigger them. But then who does it and who pays for those frontage improvements? So – but probably a topic for, like, a lot more discussion, but that can be something we could add to our work plan.
So what is it exactly that we're adding to our work plan in that regard? What's the title of it? What is – Sherry's sitting there going, so what is
– I would say assisting county staff and the council on the House bills that are passed at the state level, like how to incorporate those into the county code.
Okay.
That's, I think, what it would be. And we're pretty proactive, I think. The county is more proactive than most.
Max and I met last year and went through all of the housing ones, and oddly enough, very few actually impact because they're generally directed towards cities and not counties. So,
yeah.
But
most of them are. We're just a unique county.
We're
one of the few counties that actually almost functions as a city.
Yeah.
We have urban development inside the county, and most counties don't.
Yeah.
So we're unique in that way.
I actually got an alert today that there was a bill that was introduced that had something to do with affordable housing and the Growth Management Act. And I got the impression it was trying to loosen some of the restrictions on development outside the GMA, but I'm not totally sure. I have to read it a little bit better. That would probably affect Clark County more than most of the bills that are more transit-oriented, development around transit nodes and things like that.
We could say 2023 housing bill considerations or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some bill, too, that basically said for multifamily properties, if they haven't, or for commercial properties, if they haven't been, had a tenant and have set vacant for a certain amount of time, it's they have to allow them to convert to residential, which that's pretty significant. Yeah, there's a bill at the state level that says that. There's talks about doing something similar for resource lands. And if that could happen, that would be great. That hasn't had too much traction yet, but if it does happen, and there are similar laws passed that where these forest ag lands that are not even functioning as forest or ag lands could automatically convert and be replaced elsewhere. So if something like that does get traction, that could be something we could assist with, but it's premature at this point.
Well, let's keep track of that because there's a lot of, as you've, or so apt to say, unintended consequences associated with that as well.
Just real quick, touching on a couple other items that are coming with the new stormwater update is that pollutant that comes from tires and the wear of tires, I think it's 6 ppd quinone or quinone, something like that, and it's the treatment of it, I guess, is pretty difficult to, but it's been linked directly to fish kill. And then the other item was, I believe it was left as kind of a recommendation, but I start beginning planning for like climate change and those type of events. So, but it's kind of a big unknown how that'll impact it.
You guys have given me a whole page of notes, so I'll work on compiling something, and then I'll connect with the two of you on it, and then we'll email it out to everybody.
Okay.
And you have a copy of the latest, a Word document of the latest work plan?
I don't know for sure it's a Word doc, but I do have it. Yeah. Okay.
I can send it to you.
Okay, anything else on that?
I think that's a really good start.
Yeah.
Really good start.
Okay, perfect. So moving on, we are at the GMA update. And I believe Jose is doing that.
Good afternoon. Yes, I am. So over, I don't know, the last couple of months, we've been working on sort of internally updating the vacant buildable lands model with our GIS folks and sort of rebuilding that and have it based on zoning so that we can estimate capacity a little bit better, consistent with some of the house bills that have been passed, HB 1220, I think, in particular. We got a little sidetracked because of the computer glitch issue at the county, but we have some draft stuff that we've been sharing with the cities and having them do sort of an initial review before we put that out and share it with the public so that we can get some feedback from you folks about that. And then that will lead into sort of the next phase of the comp plan process in terms of allocation for housing and employment. Typically, the vacant buildable lands model kind of drives that or informs that. And the other things that we've been doing, we've had a couple of hearings with council on the climate change and resiliency public participation plan. And I've also entered into contracts with Parametrics to do that climate work that's part of the comp plan update, having an interlocal agreement with the cities for that work as well, and then bringing on sort of environmental consultant to help with our EIS. I think that's what we've been working on most recently. We had a meeting with the cities earlier today, and so we're still working through some of the capacity issues and hope to resolve that within the next week or two, and then go to council to have a work session with them on that. There's a couple, I don't know if you want to get into a little more the details of the sort of housing analysis planning tool that Department of Commerce has developed, just so we can see kind of what we'll be looking at. Really, the way that we've done allocations in the past, there's a new depth where we need to allocate population to the jurisdictions to come up with housing targets, but then further broken down by income band. And that's a new twist that the having the model run based on zoning will help out with. So one, I can sort of share my screen so I can share with you what that looks like. Okay, can you see that all right? Yep. So This is a tool developed by Commerce folks, has our population target, 718,000. So this is looking at 2020 to 2045. I think we're able to update this to, I think there's 2023 OFM numbers, so that'll be updated. But based on this, 115,000 housing units is what needs to be planned for. This column in blue is sort of the distribution of share of population. And this is what the sort of VBLM will help populate for the jurisdictions in terms of their percentage share. And then when you get that, it will kick out this second line, the allocation method. So the unincorporated Clark County would be the essentially the Vancouver UGA and the rural area. The rural would come out of that share. So essentially that's showing, you know, 50,000 units that would be needed there. And then sort of the breakout by income bracket.
Percentage of what, Jose?
This is income level, percentage of area median.
Oh, percentage of area median. Thank you.
Yeah. But let me switch over to, it's going to be the same data, but with totals. You can't really modify this. It's locked by the state, so you have to create another spreadsheet. Okay. So essentially, this is the same data, and I broke this up under that methodology. Sort of the growth is divided percentage-wise evenly through the jurisdictions. So 11% for that, 11 and 18, and 7% for that 0 to 30. Percent, the 30 to 50% would be 15%, 50 to 80 would be 15%. So overall, you're planning for 48% of your housing units sub 80% of the area median income.
Which Jose, is, what does, I'm sorry, what does PSH mean? I'm sure you said it, I missed it.
I didn't. It's permanent supportive housing.
Very good, thank you.
So of that 50,000 new units, 24,000 of them would have to be available to 80% of the median income.
And when you say permanent housing needs, does that include both single family and multifamily
housing? So essentially this is a specific type of housing, the permanent supportive housing and non-permanent supportive housing. But I'm thinking that, so the way this is broken down is that the state requires us to show or demonstrate that we can accommodate, 0 to 120%. Beyond 120%, we don't really have to show anything or demonstrate that. And I think that would be, you know, most of your market rate single family housing. It'll probably creep into that 100 to 120%. The 80 to 100 could be some of the middle stuff. Some attached housing. So how that 80 to 100 splits may be a more market rate that could be done, but that 48% is, to me, looks like mostly multifamily apartments. And so having to demonstrate the capacity to achieve that is going to be a big lift for the county overall, and to a smaller extent, most of the jurisdictions. So, that's the gist of it. Any questions?
This is Oliver. Thank you, Jose. And this is the conversation we are having with our local jurisdictions. We want to firm things up, giving them opportunity to look at the current VBLM run based on zoning and some of the things that they're currently doing within their own jurisdiction. I cannot speak for any jurisdiction, but this is going to be a very, very heavy lift. Some of them may consider upzoning. I don't know that. Some of them may consider expansion of the urban growth boundary. I don't know that. But what I know that we have to do is to use this tool as provided by state. There are very hard formulas embedded in this, and we don't have the ability to change them. We may have some flexibility to adjust for the 2 or 3 years in terms of the number of units we have maybe built in the last 2 or 3 years. That we have the ability to adjust for. That also will, technically or broadly speaking, reduce the acreage as well. But this we are working through. Hopefully in the next week or two, we should be able to put out the information for the entire public, including DEEB and BIA and others to take a look at and let us know what they see in it. There are some assumptions that we have made, and as well as the series, they have provided us what their preliminary densities are going to be for some areas now under the bill that the legislature passed, even though it may not be particular to Clark County, but we have a huge unincorporated area that is developing as urban. So we may not escape the fact that 1110, that's the bill, does not apply to counties. 1220 applies to counties where we have to plan for or allow for ADU, accessory dwelling unit, triplex, fourplex, attached or apartments. And for the cities of Vancouver, I believe Commerce and Washougal, they're obligated to plan for sixplexes. I don't know how some of those cities are going to do so, but again, this is a conversation that we're having with our cities. Hopefully in the next week or so, we may agree on how to do the allocation and give the public the opportunity to view that and before we go to council. So thank you, Jose. This is just a brief, this is what I call planning by spreadsheet, but we are really have no choice except to plan for the housing units that the state is saying we have to. One of the things that is embedded in their formula is that they really also including what they call the underbuilt that we have experienced. So that is also factored in the numbers that they're showing us, but we have the ability to adjust for 2 or 3 years. Other than that, everything else in their model or in their tool is locked in, can't change them. I see, look like Jamie has his hand up, so go ahead.
Yeah, Oliver, I appreciate it. I think you answered one of the questions is, obviously it's accounting for the underbuilt, but is the numbers that the state's giving us pegged upon the population projection that we've chosen, or is this independent of that?
It is based on that, because the formula allows you to plug in the number that you have chosen. For some cities, some counties up north, they're using the OFM medium. So it is based on what your council or your legislative body, the number that they choose. If you go back to the first chart that Jose showed you, it has the number that the county just that's how we plug in the number. It just spills out what we have to plan for. So it's based on the information that they can see where the 718, yeah, the way the formula is set in, you just plug in the number, then it shows you what you have to, the number of units you have to plan for. But the caveat here is that what they set this up using the 2020 census. They have, you know, but then if you look at the 2020 to 2045, that's over 25 years. So we have the ability to adjust for 20 years because that's what we're obligated to plan for. So the 115 number may change. I just want to put that out there so that everyone knows.
That's fascinating. Thank you, Jose and Oliver.
Yeah, thank you, Oliver. Thank you, Jose. Any other questions on that before we move on? No. Okay, I know April had something. Before that, we've got, I don't see it on the agenda, but the biennial code updates was in our packet.
Yeah, I just wanted to give you guys an update. There were a few minor changes since I presented the list to you back in October. So I provided those items in a single page today. Hopefully you're able to get that before the meeting. So the first item that came up was some unclear language in the requirements for shared recreation space in multifamily development. The key issue there is in the shared open space standard, there's a language that refers to some of that space being able to be part private, which directly conflicts with the language and the purpose of shared recreation space. We initially thought this was maybe a Scrivener's error, but in doing some research, we actually found out we adopted this language intentionally back in the late 80s or early 90s. And it's been with us since then, and it hasn't really come up until now. But we did have somebody asking if they could include their private balconies as part of their shared recreation space, and that's what triggered the need to include this in the biennial code amendments. The second item is we had an item in the list that you previously reviewed. To clarify the site plan review exemption for duplexes and triplexes. However, specific review standards for those and quadplexes are going to be part of the housing options phase two conversations. So I pulled that so we wouldn't be making changes to code that's going to be revised anyway. So are there any questions about that? And we do have a work session with Planning Commission tonight, hearing in 2 weeks with Planning Commission. We have not scheduled the hearing with Council yet, but I'll be working on that soon.
And I think you have our recommendations on the balance of those as well.
Correct.
Okay.
That's in the record. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. And April, you have something exciting.
I do. I'm very excited. I had a builder propose a process improvement, which made me think about you saying, you know, let's be proactive and not only say what the issue is, but what's the process improvement. So the builder proposed because based on what their experience had been with a city jurisdiction, a local city jurisdiction, and with affordable housing and time improvements. So if you remember a year ago, I took private landscaping requirements from prior to plat recording to C of O. Okay, and that was a process improvement. So then they have asked that can they for verification take a picture of said tree without, it has to have its tag on it. So there's some things. It has to have its tag on it. We will take the picture for verification. You don't need the landscaping cert until the 22 months. So we'll give you C of O if we do the validation with the picture. You don't need the landscaping cert It is required in code, so you do, and I don't want to change it yet until I know that this works, but we'll take the picture verification with, as long as the tag. If the tag's not on it, you still need the landscaping cert. We do have to have a landscaping cert at the 22 months before we release it, and then any ones that aren't built after will need the landscaping cert because we're not responsible for private landscaping once it's out of our hands.
Sorry. When you say release it, you're referring to certificate of occupancy?
Yes.
Okay.
So right now we require a landscape cert with every single one. So yep. Let's say North Haven is 300 or 400 homes. Yep. Every single one needs a landscape cert, but that's actually not what code says. Code says it needs a landscaping cert. It just doesn't say it needs one for every single one. So, and this builder pointed that out. So it says it requires it, but it doesn't say it requires it for every single one. So that's why I'm allowing the landscape cert to be held off until the 22 months, and you can have certificate of occupancies for all of them leading up to the 22 months with one landscaping cert and a picture verifying.
Got it.
Which should very much speed up the process.
What's the 22 months?
What's the 22 months mean?
The county is no longer responsible for private improvements at 22 months. It is our releasing of it to...
So our warranty period.
Yes. So we can't make you do anything after 22 months.
Oh.
Got it.
So
now I'm trying.
So
it's
a 22-month final inspection of the whole subdivision.
Right.
All of the landscaping for those lots has to have a landscape cert at that time. Otherwise, prior to, I used to do light bulbs went on.
Okay, yep. Yep.
The picture is for occupancy at the time of the building permit.
Yep.
At the 22 months, then you do one landscape for all of those houses that have got occupancy.
The rest of it.
And then the rest of them will be at individual home occupancy. Does that make sense? Yes, he's nodding yes. Okay.
You're certifying a landscape cert is certifying.
Okay, so the individual lot. It's for the each individual lot certification up until 22 months.
Yeah.
At that 22-month period, all the rest has to be done on everything that has not yet been built out?
It has to be done individually is what she's saying.
Yes.
After that. I do have one question on this because we do it in Eastern Washington where we have weather or in certain phases to kind of help with the process. Could they throw up a bond for the remaining improvements?
Nope, we can't do anything after after the warranty
period.
Not on
landscape, you can't?
Not on private.
It's on private. That's the thing.
I guess that is on the thing, because usually it's on the street trees on the public that we do that.
Right, well, I think what they're talking about is the buffer trees, because street trees only take place here on arterials and collectors. Those are already done as part of the recording of the plat.
Correct.
And as well as the internal roads, there aren't any street tree requirements there, so any landscape requirements would be the landscape buffering requirements on private property.
Unless you're in a PUD.
Yeah, unless it's PUD.
PUD, mixed use, narrow lot.
Right.
Anything that's...
I'm not getting this. I'm not... Something's not clicking in my brain. So we can still get... Like we've been doing for like 15 freaking years. It's a landscape certification for each individual lot with the pictures and my little signature and stuff.
You do not need the landscape cert until the 22-month final inspection of the subdivision. So you'll need for all homes built prior to the 22 months. Anything after the warranty period, individual lots will require a landscape cert, individual per lot.
Okay, so no cert and then cert. But you still need the pictures of that.
One cert to encompass everything built the first 22 months.
Oh.
Because it still is required.
Okay. I got it.
You just need to provide pictures each individual lot up until the 22 months. Then one cert for all of those lots. And then after that, every lot.
Each individual lot.
Correct. But we're out of the picture after that.
After that, to be clear, it's at... After the 22 months, it's at certificate of occupancy.
That is still required.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
We're not changing that. Okay.
No.
And
great.
For like,
we're going to make it better.
Okay.
For phase developments, it's obviously going to be a different time. It's not for the entire development. So if you have phase one, it's
per phase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they stand alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that's great, especially on the smaller like townhome projects and stuff like that.
I think
it's,
I like it.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Financially responsible at that point, because you still have a bond you're releasing at that 24 months, right? So somebody's still on the hook, the original developer or builder. Who's the financially responsible person for doing
we
that?
We don't
sorry.
Bond private.
What's that?
We don't bond private.
Okay, so that's a one unintended consequence.
Correct. You will not get your bond release until we get that landscape cert for your 24 months.
There is some kind of bond, but not for the landscaping. It's just there's still a financially responsible party.
Yes,
for that
there's a maintenance bond
months.
For the public improvements, but you won't get your bond unless we have a landscape cert for all of the homes that have occupancy within that period.
Yeah.
So that will mean that they have to keep those doggone trees alive for a couple of years, man.
Correct.
If they wait.
It's optional.
But we could. This is optional, though, right? Could we go ahead and
but
get individual certs?
Still, we do a final inspection, like on site plans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You and even on subdivisions, if Kyla goes out, if there's a dead tree, she's going to tell you need to replace it
today.
Okay. Yeah. But if it's in somebody's backyard and you can't get back there because it's already sold and blah, blah, blah. All right. Well, I like it.
I would say, I mean, I appreciate that. The signing, right, you have two completely different parties most times between the developer and if you're going to release at the 24-month mark. And then there is someone and site and, you know, someone goes out and inspects and says, hey, there's dead trees in these backyards. Those people don't want a tree. I mean, that is a dynamic. You could, it's silly, but you could hit that. So that could be a problem.
What happens today?
Well, today it has to get signed off. So then you're already cleared if you're the county. So if there was a picture of it, right? With the tag. So there was a picture of it with the tag. So if we're good with that, I'm just saying, like, if we have someone who's a go-getter and goes, oh, that's a dead tree in that backyard, that is going to trip up an issue. I'm just putting that out there in the ether.
The village just needs to make sure the homeowner is aware of that.
That would ultimately go to the homeowner's responsibility because they removed a required improvement.
It would, but our bond isn't getting signed off, though, right? Our maintenance bond. That's what I'm hearing.
It's up to county interpretation, I think, on that
which
one.
Is why I'm saying it right
now.
It
happens. I mean, we've done it in the city of Vancouver. We've had to go put in, you know, 6-7 tree units. You know, we took one tree out. Next thing you know, you got to put 30 trees, and you put border trees. And, you know, nobody really wants a fir tree in their backyard, but that's what the city wants. And, you know, I've seen it. The plat signed off, and you drive by it 6 months later, and, you know, half the trees are cut out.
And like Mike said, it's voluntary. You don't have to do it. It would save you a lot of time.
No, and I think it's awesome to be able to do it. There's different parties involved. So by that, I mean the developer, the builder, the homeowner, and the county. And so it could, you know, if we're not, yeah.
I think it works good. And it, like, the longer, depending on your absorption rate is where it's going to make sense. I know, like, the smaller plats, I know, you know, the 20, 30-unit townhome projects where you're not building them one by one. You got to build a whole building at a time, and you can go through them. Absolute nightmare to get certs on. You know what I'm talking about. So this would be, you know, a great deal where you get one cert at the end and it's done.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you got one homeowner, right? It's going to be one homeowner who's like, no, I don't want any trees back there. Don't let you plant the tree to fix a dead tree or a tree they pulled. And then that's where you're running into a little bit of a conundrum.
Absolutely, especially if you're running into like a 300-lot plat or something, 200-lot plat, large.
Yeah.
And it probably makes sense if they're in the back, maybe just stay clear of it. If they're in the front, maybe.
Yeah. That's the exception, though. I've been dealing with this for 20 years, and
we came up with a great plan 12, 15 years ago. You've continued that, and this is awesome. So
yeah,
I say we just
great.
I can't take credit for it. It was Samantha at PacLife.
Okay. Well, thank her for
yeah.
us, me.
April, is there any update on Max and their replacement for him?
Yeah, like what's going on? I just talked to a client yesterday and heard that Max is gone?
Yes.
Okay.
Max, he did give a month's notice, but yes, his last day was 29th. It just went by fast because the holidays, I think it just whizzed by everybody. Right. We do have Mark Hess, who is the interim building official currently. So, you know, what Mark has 20 some odd years at the county in building inspection?
25.
Yeah, so I think we'll be all right. And it's posted, if anyone knows building official.
Okay, is there anything else? Megan?
You guys may have noticed that the meeting is now 2:30 to 4. I just wanted to make that clear. It was for scheduling issues in this room for this day every month. So just heads up on that.
Megan, what? I got to get here on time? What?
So Megan, if there ever was a meeting that we felt we would need the full 2 hours, could we meet like 30 minutes earlier to fill up that time, or are we always in that 90 minutes?
I could definitely ask the scheduler of this room that, or if we needed to bump to another day, I don't know. But I can ask for sure. If I had enough notice, I could definitely.
We don't usually take the 2 hours anyway.
Correct.
I just.
But there have been
there
times.
Have been
there
times,
have
times
been
for
times.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, like, especially for the public comment period, we could be cutting it really close.
Okay, moving on to public comment. No one in the room, anyone online? All right, with that, we will adjourn.